This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. Well, gardening and the home landscape are our topics this afternoon, and we have two guests with us this afternoon, Diane Nolan and Mike Brunk. They join us this afternoon to talk about the garden in late summer. We'll also talk about caring for trees, and we'll look ahead to the fall and talk about planting bulbs and cool weather crops. Listeners, I welcome your telephone calls for Mike and Diane. If you have questions about trees, about landscaping, about your flower, vegetable, or herb beds, they can help. Here are the telephone numbers. In the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. And the toll-free number, it is 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. WILL. Diane Nolan is the host of the WILL TV program Illinois Gardener. The program airs on Thursday evenings at 7 and at 11 o'clock on Saturday mornings. Mike Brunk is the arborist for the city of Urbana. Both have been frequent guests over the years here on the Afternoon Magazine, and they're eager to talk with you this afternoon. So give us a call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. So is it still raining out there? Is it still coming down, Mike?
It is.
Yeah. Our weather station here in the studio earlier told us, literally, it said, a little message came up on the screen, and it said, it's raining cats and dogs.
I was driving then.
Yeah.
But I'm so glad that we're not missing out valuable landscaping time to have the show.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
always nice to be doing this during
the
rain.
We got a legitimate time out.
You did very well.
This afternoon. Mike, how are you?
Good to see
you.
Very good.
Good, okay. Well, we've got a listener waiting to talk with us, I believe, in Champaign on line one. So let's go right to this caller. Hi.
Hi. I've got a hydrangea that we planted about 6 years ago, and it didn't flower the first year that we had it. The second year that we had it, it did flower through the previous year's growth, but then every year that we've had it since then, it's grown big, luscious leaves. It's, you know, maybe 4.5 feet high or so, but no flowers.
Is it in an area where the buds will be frosted off? I know we've had some later frosts a few years, but it shouldn't be every one of those years, I wouldn't think. Is it in an exposed, windy site?
Or
no, where do you have it?
It's in sort of a corner, you know, where the garage protrudes out and the front porch is right there. And it's right up nestled against the corner. It's right next to a rose bush. I don't know if the rose bush does something to it to steal its thunder, but...
Do you fertilize it?
No.
Well, those are usually the two culprits, the late frost and over-fertilization. I'm not sure.
Hmm. What side of the garage is it on?
It is on the south side of the garage.
Well, it could be moved to a little bit more, you know, a shadier spot. My hydrangeas have it where they get east sun, mm-hmm. and then they're shaded from noon on, and they've flowered, you know, pretty well. So is it too big to move? I know it sounds
yeah.
like it's gotten big.
Yeah, at this point it's too big to move. I mean, it's a big bush now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big green leafy bush that, you know, without flowers on it, it's not all that attractive. It's not unattractive, but...
But it's not a showstopper.
You know, it sounds to me, your frosting idea, with it being on the south side, the buds could... you know, swell early, and we get a late
frost. It's protected.
That could be the culprit.
Should I just burlap it or something during the winter?
Well, it's not the winter. It's the early spring.
It's where it gets a little bit warm, and then it gets cool again. It's that variation in, you know, warming temperatures and dropping temperatures.
Yeah, you know, our early April warm temperatures, and then we go into a sudden freeze or a frost below freezing. That can nip the buds. It's the same thing that happens to the magnolias about every, once every 5 years we get a good flowering in those magnolias, and the other four is lesser flowering because of the frost nipping the buds. That would be my guess, too.
Okay, well, I'll try and protect it more, and maybe I'll give it one more year, and then we'll try something else.
That sounds like a good idea.
If you see a frost coming along after some good hot sunny days, that's the time to put a sheet or a burlap kind of covering over it that night.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Hang in there. They are beautiful when they do flower, though, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, they're a lovely tree. Well, let's talk now with a listener on line two. Where are you calling from this afternoon?
I'm calling from Savoy.
Okay.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I've got firebush and Korean lilac that have kind of overgrown the foundation plantings. Can I cut those back? How far? When do I do it?
Somebody want to hop in?
Early spring. And the burning bush, I think, is what she's talking about.
Burning bush, that's it. Right.
Yeah, I was thinking fire bush.
Sorry.
Burning bush.
Right.
Now, burning bush, it wouldn't matter so much. The lilac, you probably would want to do, isn't it after flowering that's probably safest?
Oh, sure. If it flowers before, June, which it does, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how much do you cut out when you're pruning these?
We have Miss Kim lilacs around town, and there are 8 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be kind of difficult to keep, of a smaller size.
They're not the 3-4 footers that sometimes they're advertised.
You can't just hack them back and hope that they'll leaf out again then.
Usually they say to take a third at a time. Now that third can be from the top down a third, or it can be the whole branch down into it, but not to go much more than a third.
A third, okay.
So it's somewhat up to you. You might do a 1/3 from the top down.
Okay.
And then in other years, do a 1/3 to thin it.
Okay.
And a combination, maybe so, every other year.
Well, sure. With that one, you work over time to get it to a smaller size.
Is it just a bad foundation plant for up against the house? I mean, is it better just to take it out maybe?
It's such a nice plant if it could be moved. I know that sounds like a lot of work. Are there any things that you can layer where you take the end branches and you wound it underneath and place it down into the soil? Maybe you can layer some and move those out before you would remove the whole plant.
Okay.
Try to get some small plants from it because it's such a nice plant. I have it edging around the side of a small pond for a barrier visually and, physically, and it's so, so pretty.
Right. Right.
So see if you can layer it and get something from it if it's too big to move. But it is a large plant. But once you got it under control and you knew it was going to get too tall, then that easier pruning yearly would keep it in check after flowering.
After flowering. So is it too late to do it now? Do I wait until after spring flowering, or can I do it now?
If it's that big, you may lose a few flowers, but I'd still do it.
Okay.
It's, you'll be happier, it sounds like.
Okay. And the burning bush, again, can I do that now, or do I wait till the spring for that?
I think I'd wait till spring. If you can live with it now, you're going to get you can shear the burning bush like into a hedge, and you can shear it a couple, 3 times a season if you'd like.
Okay.
But you like to do that when it's vigorously growing.
Right. I'm afraid of cutting off the outer edges and having nothing on the inside then, unless I do it, like you say, shear it. Occasionally.
Sure. And so I think the appropriate time to do that is, May or June.
Okay.
For the burning bush.
Okay. I will be patient then and wait until next spring.
And even pruning anything after having rains like this, that's less stressful.
Good point.
Try to avoid windy days and 95 degree heat. So this is actually, I'd say, get a break in the rain and run out and do it. Might be a little wet.
I might try that. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Sure.
You're very welcome.
Bye-bye.
Next, we talk with a listener in Arthur on line one. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling about birds roosting in our trees. And if you have a suggestion for getting rid of them besides, shooting?
I have a recipe if you have a pencil and paper.
I do.
Okay. It's a psychological recipe.
Oh, no.
Not for you, but for the birds. Okay, and this is what you do. When the starlings come, the first night that you try this, you let them roost and get very asleep. So let them roost for about an hour or so, and then you go out there and you do a number of things. first of all, I guess I should say, before you do this, forewarn your neighbors because it's a very noisy process. But you can take pots and pans. You can take, you know, those little air horns that they use at basketball games? Those work really well. Any kind of trumpets, any kind of something that makes a lot of noise.
Oh, my.
And you go out there and scare the dickens out of them. And I wouldn't do it under the tree unless you're wearing rain gear. And the other thing that's worked while people are doing this, if they have a team of two or three people, is to take a garden hose and spray it in the tree at the same time.
Uh-huh.
So that's the first night.
Yeah.
Now, you repeat that for three nights or more, but the second night you do it a little sooner. So you let them roost into the tree. You wait maybe a half an hour after they're quieted down. You do the same thing. Now, if they come back that night, that's fine. The third night, you do it as soon as they roost. And then every night after the third night, as soon as they roost, and you'll eventually chase them off because you're creating a an environment that's not hospitable to them.
So I need to ask, are you talking about starlings?
I am.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah,
they're just starting. This is the time of year where they start to roost.
And they've been roosting for a while. They're feeling very comfortable there.
Okay. Well,
time to strike.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, because for most nesting birds, roosting birds, it's birds you want. But if you're talking starlings, that was a very interesting recipe.
Oh, do you think I could have an arborist thin out the trees?
Well, you know, that certainly can work, but you're wounding the tree. And basically, the bird wins then. Well, I mean, you're providing wounds in the tree for every cut that you make that's not good for a tree. And just for the sake of trying to keep the birds out, I think you're damaging the tree. Mm-hmm. And it's not worth it. So I always strongly recommend not to thin the tree. I mean, I know that's been recommended by wildlife professionals, but especially in urban situations where the trees are stressed for so many other reasons. To thin a tree to grow grass or to get rid of birds just is not a good idea, in my opinion.
I don't know if you'd call Arthur urban, but we certainly do have all of those starlings sitting there, and they've been mm-hmm. sitting there for a long time.
Well, they'll still sit there even though you have fewer branches. You have to make the environment unfriendly to them, and scaring them with noise and like a water hose does the trick. I've been providing, this is a recipe from the state IDNR. I've been passing it along to people for probably 6 or 7 or 8 years now. And sometimes it takes 3 nights, sometimes it takes 7 nights, but it's always worked.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'll have to enlist my neighbors to help, though, won't I?
It can be a lot of fun, actually.
Put the kids involved.
Block party.
Yeah, block party.
Block party.
There you go.
Okay, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line 3. Hi.
Hello. Hello?
Yep. Hello.
What can we do for you?
I have a question about the university's involvement in prairie. At some stage, there was a plan for the area south of the university president's house, and there was room assigned to a native planting, probably on the south end. I sincerely hope that hasn't been dropped from all the machinations that involve orchard downs and other things. I think it's very important that the university in the prairie state have plots of prairie where they can demonstrate how to burn, how to move and shake, how to answer questions about Meadowbrook extending their prairie, how to teach about prairie. I find it in other institutions, and I find a reasonable degree of reluctance at the University of Illinois. Instance the fact that quite a bit of little blue stem was put in around the Helene Monument and then pulled out. So I'm just wondering, what is the horticultural attitude to prairie? I must say that, on the other hand, ACES is running a naturalist, a master gardener, mm-hmm. equivalent of a naturalist gardener, and I find that very, very positive. And so I would like something that's demonstration in style to be in existence within the framework of the university.
Well, the native plantings that I think you're talking about are part of the U of I Arboretum overall plan, and there's no, it hasn't been taken out of the plan. There's just a lack of, and you
been
know
there
that
for a long time. I think it must be at least 10 years or somewhere near that.
Of course, I've heard about the Arboretum for 35, so it's really just the stalling has to do, and you know it's coming, it has to do with funding, and it has to do with, you know, getting it put in. There's no move to take that out at all. It's just it has not had any funding source, and I think it would look great.
It's not an awfully expensive operation to put in.
No, it really isn't.
So I would encourage you, since you're both in the field, to encourage the prairie part of the prairie forest ecosystem.
Point well taken.
Okay. I agree. That'd be great.
But it is a resource question, I think, because you know the grounds crew has so much to do, and here at WILL,
there's no resources for each building.
Us gardeners in the building,
right,
to go out there and pull weeds and put down mulch. And
it truly is a time management plus the startup costs that, you know, it really is a resource.
And that's been a slowly developing area of campus out there. I mean, it's a multi-year project, isn't it?
And it has no funding to go beyond it until funding sources are built up.
Yeah.
So, but we were happy that the donation started for the beginning phase of it, and that just happened to be a math teacher at Uni High School.
Right.
So that's why we have what we do have, and we're glad to have that much.
Well, I would encourage you to encourage the system.
Okay, well, thanks for the call.
I would love to do that.
We're going to talk now with a listener in Lake Bloomington on line 4. Hi.
I wonder if y'all could tell me whether a vigorous vine like English ivy can kill an oak tree.
Well,
if I don't keep pulling it down.
Certainly, as the oak tree grows, if the vine is in long enough, it can squeeze off the cambium.
Well, this is an already grown, it's a mature oak tree.
I generally recommend that the vines be taken out of trees and not left to grow.
Okay, I was afraid that's what you were going to say. It certainly is a lot of work, but
it is a lot of work. Now, the thing you have to be careful of is the vine growing around the, you know, if it's just growing up one side of the tree, it's not so much to worry as when it goes and wraps around a branch. So it's going around the total circumference of the branch or the tree, and that's where the tree grows, the branch grows, and the cambium can be squeezed off, which can cause dieback.
Okay, thank you for the advice. May I ask you one more question?
Certainly.
I need an arborist to come to my house and look at a tree, and I don't know how to find one. I've looked in the Yellow Pages, and either I'm spelling it wrong or we don't list any here.
Well, that's a very good question.
I think your master gardeners would probably know at the extension office. That would be one place to start.
Okay.
Or you could look under, try trees in the Yellow Pages.
I tried that, and all I found was, I already have one of those, the people that take them down, you know.
Mm-hmm. But I think master gardeners, they end up knowing who the professionals are in an area, so you might try the McLean County Extension Service.
All right, that's a very good suggestion. Thank you so much.
Now, question, I'd like to share that people should ask their arborists once they find them, that they have insurance, or to verify that they have insurance, because it's a dangerous job, that they're climbing at heights on the person's property. They certainly need insurance in case they get hit or hurt. And then the second thing is to see their certification, to see that they have kept up their certification.
Okay. So isn't there somebody who would have a list of those certifications?
Well, there's an organization called the Illinois Arborist Association, and you ought to be able to Google that and find it on the Internet.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Well, bye-bye.
Bye. One of the things that is tough with arborists, I imagine the job outlook for these men and women is terrific because they're so busy. When's the best time of year to call and make an appointment and get them lined up so, you know, you're on their calendar, you're on their schedule?
Fall and winter.
Fall and winter, okay.
In this community especially, the CU community, there's more work than there are arborists. So it's very, very difficult to get on their schedule unless you think ahead.
Okay. Let's talk with another caller now, a listener in Champaign on line two.
Yes, good afternoon. I have two, what I think are juniper bushes. They're those kind of leafy, they're kind of, they're not a leaf, it's more like a, somebody told me they were juniper bushes. And lately we've been getting this thick film a spider web, only, you know, thick and large. And I wonder what infestation we have, and are we better off taking out the juniper bushes than to try to save them?
Is it orange and slimy?
Pardon me?
Is the growth orange and slimy?
No, it's like a huge cobweb.
Is it bagworms?
Oh, it could be
on juniper.
Fall webworm.
Fall webworm. That's what I mean. Webworm.
Fall webworm. And does this kill the tree? What are your suggestions?
Well, generally, you can if you can reach it, you can take the web out. But the fall webworm comes at a time that the trees, certainly deciduous trees, have passed all their nutrients and things down to the roots. So it really is not a harmful insect. It's more of an eyesore.
It is an eyesore, yes, that's true. So and I can just leave it and wait for the rain to wash it away?
Oh, I'd trim it out if I were you. If you can you reach it?
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
That's no, great. I'd just do a little pruning and get it into a bag and cart it away.
Okay. Is it okay for a landfill or?
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm.
You want to put it in a garbage bag and put it in your trash can.
Okay. And it's called fall worms?
Fall webworm.
Fall webworms. They do make the web, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, somebody told me that junipers were just a pain in the neck anyway. And is that true, or, you know, do people recommend replacing them, keeping them?
Every plant has its place. And
okay. Is it in the right place at the right size?
Well, it's just in front of a window. It's
if it's the right size and the right look for you and doesn't have any major problems, I just ignore those people. But if it's something that's bothering you, maybe it is a wrong place, a wrong plant in the wrong place. But really, there's so many types of junipers that you have to decide, I guess, is this what I want for this spot?
Sure, it's a personal preference. And if it's not causing a lot of extra ordinary maintenance, junipers.
Well, it doesn't seem to, and we just moved in and found this, and we were, just kind of.
I would live with it. Any time you move into a place, I would live with it for a couple years and then find out, if it's not major things, you can do little things. But I know people that tear out their whole yard the first summer, and I thought, well, what have you missed? Mm-hmm. You don't know about the plants you have in your yard if it's brand new. So I would live with it for at least a year.
Sure.
Okay, and then make a decision. But get rid of that. Cut them out. Will ordinary scissors work, or you need pruning shears?
Pruning shears are probably best.
Okay, and just bag it up and send it to the landfill.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, and I want to thank you for the call this afternoon. Next, we take a call from a listener in St. Joseph on line one. Hi.
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 My topic is bagworms, and I've been using Isotox to spray them, get a couple windbreaks, and now I'm just finding they're infested with bagworms. I sprayed this past weekend with Isotox, and I ran out, and I tried to get some more. I understand it's no longer available, and I just wondered, what is an effective replacement for Isotox?
Okay. I think there's a better spray. It's a little safer to use, and it's, now my mind's gone blank. A Thuricide.
Or spell it, please.
Bacillus thuringiensis. Thuricide is spelled T-H-U-R-C-I-D-E.
T-H-U-R what?
C-I-D-E.
C-I-D-E. Thuricide, okay.
T-H-U-R-I-C-I-D-E, right?
H-O-R-I.
Right.
Something
that's
like
right.
that.
Yeah, there's an I after the R, but yeah. You said it right.
T-H-U-R-I-C-I-D-E.
Yeah, that's one product. The other one is a systemic, and it's a synthetic pyrethroid. I can't think of the name of it right off the top of my head, but do you have a local garden store?
Well, you know, I live in rural St. Joe. I come in Alon AFS, Farm & Fleet. Where?
Alon AFS has actually a book there, an ortho book that you can look up bagworms, and it suggests several products.
Oh, okay.
But any garden center like that would be able to guide you. There's several products. One's a systemic. This Thuricide is fairly safe to use. It works best when they're young.
Yeah.
So the bagworms are pretty mature right now, and it's going to be hard to control them, a lot harder than it would be if you would have treated it in early July, for example.
Yeah.
And that's when they string down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
so early
when
July
get
is when I should be checking for them?
Well, yes. Now, they're very, very tiny, and it's... Have you ever hunted for mushrooms before?
No.
Well, it's kind of like that. You have to see one, and then you can see hundreds.
Oh.
But they're about an eighth of an inch or quarter inch long in early July, and you kind of look in the junipers usually where they are, and see movement out of the side of your eye.
Yeah.
And you can find those little guys. The trick, if you don't spray or catch them with a spray, is this winter I'll go through and pick all the bags off. Those are easy to see. They're about the size of your thumb.
Yeah.
For every bag that you leave, there could be 1,000 little ones the next spring.
Oh, my gosh. Well, some of these are like 12, 15, 18 feet. This pretty tall pines, blue spruce and all.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay. Well, when I pick them off, isn't there something about the... the silk that goes around the branch, does that have to be cut off, or should the branch be cut off, or what?
Oh no, just pull the bagworm off.
Oh, okay.
You don't have to worry about the silk that it's stuck to the branch with.
Oh, okay.
And then, again, just like the webworms, you're going to want to bag those into a plastic bag and dispose of them rather than put them in a compost pile or anything like that.
I'll bag them. Okay, so just don't leave them on the ground, huh?
No.
No, because they will emerge.
Oh, really?
It's a really great little condominium for them, and it takes them. It's self-contained until next year.
Well, when I pull them off, I squeeze them, and you know, I feel a mush, and the stuff squeezes out, all that kind of stuff. But some of that can survive, or there's can be some.
There can be 1,000 in there.
Yeah, that's mama.
Oh, really?
That's the mother you're squeezing into goo, and
not the
eggs.
Offspring.
Yeah.
Oh my. Okay.
The other product that I was thinking of, it came to mind, is called Tempo.
Tempo. Okay. EMPO?
Yes.
Okay. So you think Alon AFS would carry this stuff?
Or any other garden center. I mean, it's a fairly common problem.
Oh, it's okay.
I know it's really great. Dr. Appleby and Phil Nixon will often come on in June and July with the first sightings of the little ones coming out of the bags and for the Illinois Gardener Show. And they say, get on it now. And so it is a little past, but if you watch that great show on Thursday night in the summer, they really do have up to the moment sightings of when they have just first mm-hmm. emerged.
Great.
But there's a 2 to 3 week window even.
There is. It's weather dependent.
Mm-hmm.
You'll probably have more luck if you do try to treat with the synthetic pyrethroid at this time of the year, the Tempo.
Uh-huh. And what is it, the Illinois Gardener, is that what you're recommending?
Yes, it's every Thursday night, and it repeats every Saturday at 11.
Okay.
I happen to know that because I'm the host of the show.
It's a great show.
Saturday and Thursday?
Saturday night, it's live at
Thursday
7.
Night.
Oh, sorry. Thursday night, it's live at 7, and it repeats, re-airs Saturday morning at 11.
Oh, okay, good. Okay, that's good. I'll get that on my program.
Yeah, put that on your...
Well, super. Thanks a lot.
Things to-do list. And on the live program, folks can call in, right?
Right.
That's the idea.
And Mike's often on the live program, so.
Very good.
But the entomologists are so knowledgeable, and they have right up to the moment late-breaking insect news.
And Phil is a fairly frequent guest on Focus 580 as well.
Yes.
With David Engine in the morning. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Champaign, line 3. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for the program. I have an old white birch, about 50 feet tall. I was away 2 weeks in July, came home, and the Japanese beetles had kind of devoured the tree, the leaves.
Yes, they love linden, birch, roses, all of the mallow family.
Mm-hmm.
It won't kill it. Does it look completely defoliated?
There's very little green on it right now.
My linden has been defoliated 2 to 3, maybe 4 years now, and not completely, and it will reflush.
Okay.
Another.
Just help it along through the dry period. If the rains don't continue, we go into another dry spell. Water.
Okay.
You know, the root system. So.
So the tree will re-leaf next spring, then.
It may even do it this late summer or early fall, slightly.
And if I have another similar white birch about 50 yards away on the other side of the house that isn't as devastated, is there anything to do at this point?
No, not at this point. Okay. The treatment that has come out in the past 2 or 3 or maybe 5 years ago is systemic that you pour around the base of the tree, and it has to be done in basically the fall is what I'm hearing now. If I
understand. Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We used to say early.
That's right.
April
early
into March.
Spring.
It's advanced bear advanced insect control.
And for tree and shrubs.
For trees and shrubs.
And in the first word, the proper name for it was
Bayer.
Bayer is the company. BAYER. Like
as an aspirin.
Okay.
Advanced insect control for trees and shrubs.
Okay.
Now, there was something that the entomologist, Dr. Appleby, had that was a Cyfluthrin.
Oh, sure.
Is there a spray that will check something right at this moment? But I can't remember. And it's also a Bayer product. You might look around.
Okay. I know I'm accustomed to putting Saigon on in the spring for the boar.
Right.
I don't think that chemical's...
That's what I was thinking. I think that's... You must have one that's left, but you won't be able to repurchase that.
Yeah, okay.
But there is something that will just help for about a week or two, and it's a spray that's by the Bayer company.
The Saigon won't work for the beetle, the Japanese beetle.
Right,
because it just, you know, flies and lands on the leaves.
But you have the self-discipline to put that on in the spring, so now you can add another one for fall for this Bayer product.
Right. Okay, I will look for that product then.
But look for the one that's the spray that will catch it right now.
Okay. It was
and do both.
Quite devastating to come home and find the tree.
Oh, sure.
In that condition. All right, well, I appreciate your advice.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the call. Next, we talk with a listener in Belgium. Line 4, hi.
Good morning, or I guess good afternoon. I'd like to bring up a topic, and it might not be actually in your field of expertise, but we'll try it. Are you aware of the fungus that is attacking butternut trees? Butternut being a cousin to the black walnut, very prevalent in this area.
No.
The fungus started, as far as I know, in Washington, D.C.,
mm-hmm.
and spread a great deal across eastern United States. Butternut, it's so similar to walnut, most people don't know the difference. It has an oblong nut. Instead of having the 11 to 13 leaflets on the stalk, it has 15 to 17. A beautiful lumber wood. That's what I do for a living, is work with wood. And I didn't know whether you knew very much about this or not, since we're talking about trees.
No, I don't. I know the tree, I believe. Doesn't it have a sulfur yellow bud, terminal bud?
Yes, I think it does, now that I think about it. The fruit is how I recognize it so readily. It's a walnut is usually round and global in shape, just like a sphere. A butternut is a long oblate type of nut,
mm-hmm.
okay? Much longer in the lengthways than it is round in diameter. And when you see the seed itself, they both look round, which is kind of strange. The nut is tasty, but it's not as prevalently used as the black walnut. People will eat that, and then again, the butternut really wasn't as prevalent as black walnut trees around either, but it had fabulous wood. It used to be called satin walnut, white walnut. Some of the older furniture you find, sometimes you'll see a butternut in it. They used to have huge, wide boards, but They seem to be disappearing like most of the large trees in America.
Is there control for this fungus? Or?
That's what I was going to ask you about. I happen to have a smaller butternut tree on the property I own, along with many walnuts, but just a couple, three butternuts, and I was hoping you could tell me something about how to maybe hope to keep it. The fungus probably hadn't got to it yet.
Have you contacted any of the forestry groups?
No, I haven't.
Is there an Illini forestry? I know there's a student group, and I thought it was associated with a state one.
Yeah.
But you might...
might look into that.
Yeah,
well, sure.
They would be covered under my department, which is Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences at the U of I.
Yeah, we're pretty much at the very western edge of the butternut range.
I wondered.
You start once... Well, the eastern deciduous hardwood forest stopped essentially at the Wabash River, and we come into prairie here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then it continues around up through river valleys and stuff through Illinois, but it's not prevalent at all, especially once you get past the Mississippi. And I just wondered a little bit about it.
I wonder about IDNR also, if they're aware of it.
I don't know. Everybody's talking about the emerald ash borer, which is a very nasty bug. I sure hope it doesn't get too much more in Illinois than it does. But
that's for sure.
There's many, many plant diseases that seems to be destroying this beautiful forest that at one time was very much like the Amazon, you know. When our forefathers came here, it was a huge, immense forest that we have no concept of today as what it was. Well, I don't want to take any more of the important time you guys have. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for your comment.
Thanks for the call. That's something to look into.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Very interesting. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and our guests this afternoon are Mike Brunk. He's the arborist for the city of Urbana, and Diane Noland is with us as well. She's a horticulturist here at the University of Illinois in the College of Aces, and she is also the host of the WYLL-TV program, Illinois Gardener. That program airs live on Thursday evenings at 7 on WYLL-TV, and again is repeated at 11 o'clock on Saturday mornings. It's a taped repeat of the program, Saturday mornings at 11. My name is Celeste Quinn, and listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with questions about gardening, about trees, about the landscape late in summer. Diane?
I have been vegetable gardening a lot this summer, and I just want to have people be aware that they can be planting a late summer, early fall garden. I have probably 2-week-old lettuce leaves that are just came up beautifully. I'm going to replant kohlrabi, radishes, a lot of the cool season crops. If you give it a little bit of shade and a lot of water, you can get them started again and, you know, go into the fall. Turnips, probably beets. It might be a little bit late for beets, but there are a lot of things that you can keep going, and there's nothing better than lettuce and radishes out of your own garden, even spinach. It didn't germinate as well, but it's still
And also, I have discovered that, if you buy packets of seed like for herbs like basil, you know, and you're not going to you're probably not going to plant the whole package, or if you're going to grow a couple of different varieties. But it's fun once you do the harvesting of the big plants to reseed that again. It's still hot enough for them. And even if you don't get
3-foot tall basil this year,
even if you don't get, you know, the huge plants again, they're very tasty.
It is
just
so
a couple of inches tall. You know, just put that on the salad, on the tomatoes.
And I use basil instead of lettuce on a hamburger. It's really good. So there's so many things you can be doing. And starting things from seed, trees included, is such a fun thing to watch it grow. So think about the late summer fall vegetable garden as well as flowers and trees.
Okay. And as we get closer to Labor Day, as we get closer to, October, what kinds of things can we still put into the garden, let's say, as late as Labor Day in the vegetable beds?
It'd probably be a little too late now. Last year wouldn't have been for even green beans. But if you have a short maturing variety, look to see for the shortest varieties. But all of the cool crops, if you can find them, cabbage plants, they would probably do it. But it's usually the lettuces, all the different types, and you can get the oak leaf lettuce, the reds, greens. I really like the kohlrabi. It's so good, and it's a pretty short maturing plant. Carrots take too much time. but you can get turnips, beets, those kinds of things. And Brussels sprouts actually do better after a frost.
They taste much, much better after they've had that.
So if you have plants of things, that's the hard thing, is getting plants of things that take too long to mature.
Yeah.
But you can still be planting some of those things.
Yeah. We have a few minutes remaining, just a couple minutes remaining in this portion, excuse me, of the program. If you'd like to talk with Diane and Mike, give us a call, 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Heading for fall now, Mike, how large a window remains for planting trees and shrubs?
Well, we plant some of our trees in the fall. We plant the majority of them in the spring, but we do plant a number of trees in the fall, and it's generally towards the end of October, beginning of November. So that's coming up. The other thing to keep in mind for fall, now that we have the dreaded emerald ash borer in Illinois, is firewood. Firewood is the main culprit for spreading that insect around the United States, and I'd like to warn everybody to be choosy about your firewood. People should only use locally grown firewood. There are firewood sellers out there that are bringing wood in from other states, and that's exactly how that insect's going to be spread around our state. So we really want to keep the insect out of our communities. We need to make sure we know where our firewood's coming from.
Okay, so what's the situation at the yard waste reclamation site in terms of firewood?
The landscape recycling center, all that firewood comes from the local community.
Okay.
And of course, the bulk wood out there is free. There is split firewood that they charge for, but there's bulk wood out there that's free.
What are the hours, Mike?
It's 8 to 4, Monday through Saturday.
Okay.
So I know campgrounds are a problem. If you've gone camping, they don't let you bring anything. You buy it there and you leave it there. So don't transport it anywhere.
That's serious stuff.
It is.
Let's talk with a listener in Champaign. Line one, hi.
I have a question. You mentioned a product, Bayer something or other, for trees that you applied in the fall that might help the beetle. Could you put that product around your rose plants?
Most certainly.
Yes, you may.
That might be helpful.
Yeah, it is, and you can apply them around the roses in April is a good time to do it for.
April.
Because it's a smaller trunked tree,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it's systemic and it goes all through the plant. But a rose is smaller than these larger trees, so it can be in spring, and it's worked very well. I've tried it.
All right. Thank you all.
You're welcome.
You're very welcome. And that is the Bayer Advanced Insect Control?
For trees and shrubs.
For trees and shrubs. Can you put that on fruit trees, or is that the systemic, or would you want to check into that before you use that?
That's a very good question. If you're putting it on something you eat, I probably wouldn't recommend it.
Okay.
I know it's labeled for, Jim Appleby and I discussed, it's labeled for one type of fruit, and he thinks it's a typo, because you really don't want anything systemic going through something you're going to eat.
I don't think so either. But I was talking with somebody who has peach trees, and they were hit hard this year by Japanese beetles. And he was looking for something to help. And you
it's
know
so
when you
hard
have a,
when you're going
when
to
you have an edible, you don't want to
soapy water.
Yeah, but it's hard. It's
and time
hard to get a tree cleaned out of Japanese beetles. Well, there we will leave it. No doubt, the two of you will come back. And maybe we'll see Chuck in the near future as well. It's
sure.
always fun to talk
I'd be
with
glad
you.
To.
The listeners love it. So this is the Afternoon Magazine, and we're going to wrap up this portion of the program. Diane Noland and Mike Brunk have been our guests in this portion of the program.